Welcome to the Hermes Investment Podcast, bringing you up-to-date views from our team.
Hi everybody, I'm Johan Murray, the Head of Investment at Hermes Investment Management. In this podcast, we'll be discussing the impressive growth of credit markets outside of the US and the compelling opportunities this presents for investors seeking greater diversification. We'll also explore the potential for generating alpha through active engagement on ESG issues. And to delve into this topic in more detail, today I'm joined by Andrei Kuznetsov, Portfolio Manager in the Hermes Credit Team. Good morning, Andrei. So if we look at the history of global high-yield markets, how has the world changed and how is it different now?
Good morning and thank you for having me. It is quite an interesting topic. Today is not all about just selecting the right company, but also as much it is about security selection and fixed income characteristics of the credit market. And what do I mean by that? It is you have to select the right part of the capital structure, whether it's secured bonds, unsecured, whether it's corporate hybrids, and the right currency, as now, US dollar is only 75% of the global credit market. Also, given the current yield environment, the positioning in the curve is very important. So you have to take into account the roll-down impact on your portfolio and the rates positioning together with your spread positioning.
So more recently then, what are some of the trends that have impacted the way in which you invest?
I think there are a couple of things going on in the credit markets. First of all, it's the impressive growth of European credit market, which has been driven by several factors, like moving from bank lending to high-yield markets, as well as increased demand from investors for credit instruments in low interest rate environment. Also, international companies are recognizing the deepness of European credit market and looking to tap European market or euro-denominated market. The second trend is the impressive growth of emerging markets. It's in the past 10 years, the asset class is now 6 times larger. And also, there are now 81 countries in global high yield, which was only 20 years ago. And the third biggest trend is obviously the ESG integration and engagement opportunities that current environment presents.
You've recently published your latest Spectrum piece covering many of these issues that we're talking about today. And reading through the note, it really surprised me that US companies are now the second largest issuers in the euro-denominated market. And what's driving that?
There are several factors at play. First of all, as US companies have been acquiring European companies, they now have European revenues or revenues in euros, and they are looking to match revenues and costs more efficiently. Also, we are now in a low rate environment in European markets, so it helps them optimize their funding mix. At the same time, they recognize that it's a different set of investors, and it increases their ability to raise larger amount of capital.
So what does that actually mean then for investors such as yourself, and what's driving your decision on the right currency?
It is critical to be able to choose the right currency. Currently, reverse Yankees are attractive for several reasons. First, they're wide on spread basis, and it is driven by several factors. First of all, and most importantly, they are less covered by European analysts. And this is why we have direct correlation between rating and the reverse Yankee premium. And second is the cross-currency pickup. This is what you get when you hedge the currency back into dollars from euros. Bigger picture, the hedging costs are impacted by difference in the interest rate environment between different currencies. And this drives global flows as well. That's why we have seen significant inflows into US credit in the past few years, as US interest rates curve has been steep. And given the recent flattening of the US credit curves, we've seen weaker flows into US credit because in essence, your investment in foreign currency is a curve trade because you are hedging at the front end of the curve and you invest at the longer end.
So you mentioned there about how you select the right instrument within the capital structure. So what other trends do you think are important?
I think now there are various instruments available to investors. So when looking at the right instrument, you need to keep in mind the bond CDS basis, the difference in curve shapes in CDS and bond market. Looking at bonds versus loans and convertible bonds, you need to take into account the volatility adjusted returns and the capital appreciation potential of the right instrument. When just looking at bonds, picking the right point on a credit curve is increasingly important given the importance of roll-down effect. And then, as we have discussed earlier, choosing the right currency can offer attractive pickup within the same cap structures.
The second trend that you mentioned, Andre, was emerging markets. And what is it that's driving the spectacular growth in EM credit?
I think apart from the good growth momentum, it's the fact that issuers are looking to diversify from local bank lending and also extend their maturity profiles, as well as their realization that public scrutiny that comes with international bond markets is a good preparation for then accessing the equity markets.
From an investment perspective, so how different is emerging market credit?
When investors talk about emerging markets, they talk about the sovereign risk premium as being the main difference. But as we have recently learned, you also have to account for sovereign risk premium in developed market, whether it's the European financial crisis, Brexit, the recent Italian budget, or any other issues. We think that sovereign risk premium exists across both developed market and emerging markets. And one of the ways to assess that risk is through the sovereign CDS market. When invest in a corporate, in EM or DM, you need to take into account where the sovereign CDS for that particular market is trading.
And why do you think that investors should be paying attention to the EM credit world?
Emerging markets now account for 85% of global population, 60% of GDP, an impressive 80% of growth that we have seen since 2008 financial crisis. And they are expected to grow at least double the rate of developed market in the upcoming years, according to IMF forecast. And as we have discussed earlier, the asset class is now six times what it was before. And at the same time, it still accounts only for roughly 13% of global financial markets.
So clearly there are a host of benefits to investing globally. I wonder if you'd like to comment on some of those and maybe also touch on, do you fear the potential for a bubble in EM credit?
I think in addition to giving access to different macroeconomic environment and attractive spread for leverage that you see in the emerging markets, also there is more opportunity for engagement in emerging markets. In terms of the bubble, I think it is true that the hard currency issuance have been at records in the past years. But I think you need to keep in mind several offsetting factors. First of all, one-third of the issuers in a EM hard currency have income or revenues in hard currency. So those are your energy and metals and mining companies. Also, on average, EM credit has higher credit quality. So the capital structures are properly adjusted for the more volatile environment.
So that's good to know. We don't need to worry about the potential for any bubble in EM credit. I'm going to bring you back to your third theme. It's a theme that the team has published extensively on over the last couple of years, and that's ESG integration and engagement. So I wonder if you could share your thoughts on why ESG integration is even more important in the emerging market.
I think if your analysts are sector specialists and cover both DM and EM issuers, you realize that there's a stark difference in ESG profiles between the two. A lot of it comes from the fact that the EM issuers are new to the market and they're not entirely aware what usual expectations are for international bond investors. And that has given us a great insight into a way to approach emerging market engagement. And we think for some issuers, it's very beneficial to understand how their competitors in developed market are approaching ESG. For example, recently we have had discussions with a Chinese issuer that is now a pretty sizable issuer in the global credit markets, but is only recently joined the hard currency market. And we're not aware that it is quite common to have quarterly conference calls after the earnings that are public and recorded for the benefit of all.
So remind me, Andre, how do you and the team quantify the ESG alpha opportunity?
So last year, my colleague Mitch has written a paper about pricing of ESG risks in credit markets. And what we have found is that poor ESG practices are correlated with spread levels and the volatility of spreads, and this is adjusted for the rating differential. As a result, we think by improving ESG profiles of issuers, you can generate alpha.
And do you find that EM companies are open to engagement?
I think it is increasingly so. And there are several trends behind that. First of all, they realize the importance, as we have discussed, of diversifying their funding base and going to international capital markets. And increasingly, investors across the world are paying attention to ESG issues. And it's a kind of self-fulfilling prophecy. They also, at the same time, want to close a gap with their competitors in developed market, as in current global environment, they all compete with each other. For example, steel companies in Brazil compete with US steel companies, compete with Russian, Chinese, and European steel companies. So it's for their own benefit that they understand how their ESG profile differs from their DM peers.
Traditional thinking would suggest that engagement really is a field for equity investors. So do you find that companies are willing to engage with debt investors such as yourselves?
It is an interesting question. What we have found that if you look at long-term returns and take a more holistic approach to credit and equity investment, you realize that ESG factors have impact on both cash flows and enterprise value, and in the end, they impact both type of investors. It is true that in some short-term instances like share buybacks and M&A, the interest might diverge, but in a long-term perspective, both equity and credit investors have the same issues at heart.
I always find it really encouraging that equity and debt investors can work together. And in fact, we've recently done a podcast with your colleague Mitch and Hans Hurt, our head of EOS Engagement Services. And so how exactly do you go about integrating ESG factors?
So I think it's a three-step approach for us. First of all of our analysts do their original ESG work based on conversations with the company and official reporting, as well as external data sources and internal QSG scores provided by our global equities team. Second part is pricing of ESG risks. And based on the paper that we have discussed earlier, during our investment committees, we try to understand whether we are compensated for the ESG risks or opportunities in this particular credit. And the third step is to understand whether we want to engage and whether there's an opportunity there to generate alpha from engaging with the issuer and helping them improve their ESG profile.
So why integrate ESG and engage rather than the alternative approach, which would simply be to divest from companies or sectors that you don't like?
We think longer term, it has a bigger impact. And if you look at holistic approach, it delivers better result for all the stakeholders. It is true that if we identify ESG issues and we engage with the company, but they do not engage and do not want to open a dialogue, we will not invest or decrease our exposure.
Andre, thank you for joining me today, and thank you all for listening.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Hermes podcast. If you found it interesting and would like to listen to more podcasts by Hermes, please visit our website, hermes-investment.com, and search for podcasts. These podcasts are for information purposes only, and the views, information, or opinions expressed therein are solely those of the individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of Hermes Investment Management and its employees. Performance should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. All the performance represented is historical. Past performance is not a reliable indicator of future results, and investors may not recover the full amount invested.